Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I'm Mike Garofalo alongside Michael Robinson. We refer to him as Super Bowl champ. I like to call him as the champ of life. What's happening, Mike Rob?
Jeezy was going down, and he can also call me real Mike Rob on all my social medias. Go follow, man. But we got a good one today, man. Great guest today. Who we got?
Two-time Pro Bowler, the X Factor, the human joystick, the only player in NFL history, 6 career punt return TDs. 6 career kick return TDs, a stat that even surprised him, Mike Rob. It is Dante Hall, the longtime chief. I'll tell you what, we just only had to like wind him up and he was ready to go. He's got great stories. He's got great energy. Interviewing him is kind of like, you know, trying to cover him on a kick. He's quick. You better get your question in and get ready for the answer. Right, Mike Rob?
You got to get your question in and get ready for the answer. And you're not going to believe who he feels should be in the Hall of Fame as a returner. You got to listen to get the answer. Check it out.
Mike Rob, we got a guy right here. I'm afraid if I just, you know, don't ask him a question quickly, he's going to be gone. Like when you try and tackle him, he's gone. It is Dante Hall, longtime NFL return man, one of the fastest, shiftiest guys that you'd ever want to see on a football field, particularly if you're recovering kicks. Mike Rob tried to do that. We're going to get to that in a little bit. Dante, first of all, welcome to the podcast. And here on NFL Total Access, the locker room, the price of admission, as we like to say, is a locker room story. And Mike Rob says, don't give us the R-rated. Don't give us the G-rated. Give us like the PG-13. That's where we like to go.
Oh, man. One of my favorite stories, man, we were preparing for a team that pretty much liked to jam receivers. So the offensive coordinator, Al Saunders, unbeknownst to the receivers, has gone over and told the DBs to, you know, be a little rough, be a little aggressive this week. And we had some veterans at the time, Eddie Kennison, Johnny Morton. I don't know if you guys remember those names.
Yeah. Yep.
Tony Gonzalez, Priest Holmes. So right off the gate, the young guys come out. And this is a Thursday, mind you. We got a big-time Monday night game coming up. It's like 12 weeks into the season. So you know how that goes, Mike Rob.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You're just sick of hitting each other, same, you know, same teammates, same guys, whatever. So I'm friends with a lot of these these defensive backs. Go out with them all the time, right? Good friends. But damn it, I'm a receiver by day. We can hang out as friends at night. So one of the DBs jams the crap out of Eddie Kennison. They get the throwing blows.
Right there on the spot?
Comes up right there on the spot. He wasn't having it that day. So one of the other DBs comes and jump in, happens to be one of my boys. So what do? I jumped in. We all jumped in. It became a battle royal. I'm not done there yet, right? So it becomes a battle royal. They break it up. So then we go to another drill. It happens again. Now it's like little one-on-one fights everywhere. Wow. It goes to the locker room. We have it's just little individual fights breaking out. Eventually, the only way Coach Ramil was able to get everyone to basically stop fighting each other was to threaten being suspended for the game, which means you didn't play on Monday night, and you lose your paycheck for that game.
What?
Yeah, man. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, my goodness. Dog, I've been in fights at practice, and usually, you know, after the fight, you know, you go in the locker room, it's totally gone away. Like, totally gone. Dudes don't even remember remember what happened. So this carried into the locker room? It carried into me?
I'm going to tell you what I think it was. So at that time, our offense was really, really good. Our defense wasn't, you know, up to par with our offense in the 03, 04, 05 season. So in my opinion, I think a lot of that resentment, that carryover, was because we felt like the defense cost us our one chance to make it to the Super Bowl.
That's
my personal opinion. It was never said publicly, but the rumblings within the locker room amongst the offensive players, that's how we felt at the time.
Well, Dante, it makes sense now. Context is everything. Okay, now it makes sense. Context is everything. It does make sense now. All right, this is a treat for me. And Mike Garofalo, you know this about me. I was a special teams guy, covered a lot of kicks. You're the only player in NFL history with 6 punt return touchdowns and 6 career kick return touchdowns. Like,
Hester doesn't take have us that?
A, I don't Hester think so.
Would have one of those records.
It's all good. I'm going off my notes, so don't worry about it. I'm going off the notes that the researcher sent me. Either way, if it's wrong, either way, it's amazing, okay? Either way, it's amazing what you did. Now, just take us into the mindset of a returner, because I played against you when you were in Kansas City in 06, and when you made it to St. Louis in 07 and 08. I played for the Niners, so I played you a bunch of times when you were in St. Louis. And there were times I remember running down on kickoff, and I remember our special teams coach saying, just take your shot. Don't stop your feet. Just take your shot, because if you stop, he's going to run around you, right? And I remember, I think I locked eyes with you as soon as you caught the ball one time, and then you were gone. It was like you caught it and you were gone. Dude, take us in the mindset of a returner, man, because, I mean, you have some of the most highlighted plays in NFL history making guys miss.
Man, I think the first mindset, Rob, you know this, you got to be somewhat crazy and you got to be very courageous. It's a delicate balance of the two. And I think I built that courage. A lot of people don't realize this. I played running back. I dotted that I in pro-style offenses from high school down in Texas at Texas A&M when it was the Big 12, you know, three yards in a cloud of dust mentality back in the 90s. Going against guys like Casey Hampton was over there at UT, Sean Rogers. So you get on special teams. I don't want to against these monsters for 4 years and then monsters back home down south that are playing Texas high school football. You returning kicks and you just got little small fullbacks like yourself and DBs and receivers trying to cover you. Like, I didn't have a worry in the world. So for me, my mindset was I was just courageous and wasn't fearful. And then, yeah, you have to be a little crazy because you're running – basically towards an entire wall of human beings coming at you. So delicate balance of crazy and courageous.
Yeah. I love it. So first of all, let's clean up the stat there. Mike Robb is correct. Devin Hester had 5 kick return touchdowns in his career. He had 14 punt return. So for you to go 6-6, that's your claim. Yeah. You know, you could say, hey, I'm the only one that had at least six and at least 6. So that's why.
I appreciate that. I wish I had that only one that had 14 punt returns. I'll take that one. But Jesus,
hey, man.
Christ.
My man was special. I still remember covering that Super Bowl where he took it to the house, and I just couldn't believe it. You're saying.
That's when, in my eyes, he became the GOAT. Because people, you know, always come up to me and like, oh, you're the best. And I went along with that a few years. When he took that opening kick return to the house in the Super Bowl, when all eyes was on him after what he had did, hey, man, you got it.
So you regard Devin as the greatest returner of all time? I heard you say it.
100%. Wow. It's not even. People always, oh, you know, it's Hester, man. It's Hester. Hey. Now, I don't like, he said something on one show that pissed me off one time, but we won't go there. But
we gotta hear what he said.
Somebody sent it to me. I can't say it verbatim, but in essence, the guy asked him, he kind of set him up. So maybe I should give Hester a little, you know, leeway. Because the guy kind of set him up and was like, Dante Hall. Now people say he's the best, blah, 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 blah. How do you feel about that? Like, is he even in your something? I forget what it was. Is he in your class or is that
stratosphere?
He basically dismissed me.
Whoa.
Go look it up. You can go look it up. I can't remember verbatim, but I was just like, dude, you the GOAT, but don't get it twisted. Like, I was a bad boy too. But
yes, you were.
Dismissed me. Pissed me off, but I said, whatever, you still the GOAT. Whatever.
your styles were different. It seemed like your stuff, like his thing was stretch it. Oh, there's my opening. Bang, I'm gone.
Yes.
Your thing, I mean, you tell me what your thing was. Watching it was just, hey, it's a
joystick.
You
know, make people
your joystick.
Miss.
Yes. Joystick. Great way of putting it.
It's kind of like Tyreek Hill now. Those guys were vertical. They seal lane, they seal opening, and they shoot through it, and they're gone. My thing was more, I could do that also, but my game was more predicated on shaking and baking, make 2, 3, 4 guys miss. And then get upfield.
And now when you're, because to me, the way he does it, right? You can kind of set it up and you got time as everybody's coming down. All right, you're going to, I can stretch him. I can work him. I could do this. To me, you have to react so much faster the way that you're doing it. Is there a strategy to it, or is it just, oh my God, let's just do this. Let's figure it out as we go along. And I'm going to trust my abilities to make it happen.
A little bit of that, but I don't know if it's strategy. I think it's more style. That was just my style always growing up, probably because I was a smaller guy. I don't know, but it was just my style. Grew up watching Barry Sanders, Ward Dunn, that era of guys. So I implemented that more. And you study Devin Hester, his style, even back when he was at Miami, was always set and hit it.
Yes.
He was never a shake and bake guy. So I think it was more styles than it was strategy.
It is definitely styles. You beat people with your short area quickness and you went through the wall. Devin waited for the wall to get to him and used the speed to go around the wall. That was really the difference in styles.
And he had crazy vision to see the holes, because those holes were not wide open. So that's, I think, his greatest trait was his vision. Then the speed. A lot of guys got speed. Think about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Some people don't know where to run with that speed.
Exactly. Who puts a fat slow guy back there and return kicks? So that's not the thing. It's the vision. This dude has the vision. X-ray vision. Yes.
You're absolutely right. And which, as we talk about return specialists, there's no return specialist in the Hall of Fame. I just want to get your take on that. What's up with that? Why do people view return specialists is not that important? Just it's your opportunity to kind of air it out.
I think it's based on the number of opportunities. What Devin Hester did, even what Deion did, Brian Mitchell, myself, we had to really go above and beyond what normal returners do, because you just don't get the opportunity. You got guys that's playing 70, 80 snaps. Of course, they're going to get the bulk of opportunity. A return man on a good day, five opportunities, five snaps, five return. Just not a lot of opportunities to make a statement as a return man. But I do think Hester should be the first return man to go in, and really? Steve Tasker. Steve Tasker's not in yet. The great.
I don't think so, but he should be.
He should be the first guy to go, and Hester should be the first return man to go. If those two can't get in, it'll never happen. Like,
that's true.
It has to happen soon. And when you got guys like yourself, to me, Hall of Famers separate themselves. Yeah, I mean, you were a guy that was game planned for. I mean, how would you go into a game, and how would the coaching staff go into a game knowing that they were going to kick away from you, and they were going to do everything they can to get you off your spot and just basically field the ball, and then we can get down there and whatever they're going to do.
It wasn't much you could really do at that time because it was new. My uncle tells me all the time, man, I didn't know what the hell a squeal kick was until he started talking to you. Never heard of a squeal kick. So I was like, you're kind of right, huh? Like, it just didn't happen. It was very frustrating. It wasn't much you can do other than try to send certain pressures to dictate, them having to kick away from that pressure. Maybe another thing we would do, my special teams coach would do a great job of giving me tendencies. When the kickers line up on this hash, it's going to go over here a specific amount of time. So then I could get a jump. Other than that, it really wasn't much you could do, but,
I'm a fast forward a little bit and get on up to the current Kansas City team. We know your love for this team runs deep. But what's going on with the squad this year, man? It's been a little bit of ups and downs. We're used to seeing them blow teams out, be undefeated. They're struggling this year. What advice would you give them? I know they bounced back over the Raiders, but what advice would you give them going forward?
I just think they've already given themselves the advice that I would give. Stop turning the ball over. That's number one. Coach Ramil used to sit in these meetings and even put these crazy stats up. Crazy, just, but if you paid attention to the stats and then started following them, they made sense. 92%, he would always tell us, was the win percentage just by not turning the ball over.
Ball over.
Give yourself a 92% chance. If you were plus, minus, plus two, plus three, those percentages went up. If you were negative, they went way down. Turnovers is everything. That's number one. The advice that I don't think they are telling themselves or hearing much, they gotta run the ball.
Oh,
I know Patrick is all world, but when he was at his greatest in the beginning, they had Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
He's no slouch. Yeah. Then they had Williams, he's Damian. In, I think, New England now. He was a great back. I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he's more of a change-up back. We need that guy, which I think we have maybe found with the new Williams that we have on the roster. Mm-hmm. He's giving us a little more of that run game because that opens up everything. And then the third thing, take what they give you. It's not Showtime-y. It's not Showtime Mahomes, but take that Tom Brady dink and dunk. Take that
there you go.
Eli Manning dink and dunk. 3 yards when it's 3rd and 8. Dump it down 3 yards and let your backs do what they do. Those three things, we stop turning the ball over, establish the run game more, and just become excited about dinks and dunks and not always the big time play over the top. I think that solves all our issues.
Mike Robb, you talked about his love for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's sitting right now in a Chiefs hoodie right now.
Yes.
So, listen.
My closet is 85% Chiefs gear. Like
85.
I have 85. Every day I wear Chiefs gear, and then I have my clothes I go out in. That's it. That's it. I'm serious, dude.
I love it, man. I love it. Where do you live in these days? Are you in the area?
Dude, I'm near you. I'm in New Jersey. Are you from?
Yeah.
You're from Jersey.
I'm from Philly originally, but I've been living in Jersey since 05. Are you around the corner? Could we have done this podcast in
pretty
person?
Pretty much. I'm in Summit. Dude, I'm in Summit.
We looked there. Summit is a beautiful town. Look at you. Look at you living the Jersey life. I love it. You get way more land for your buck out in Missouri, though. That's why I thought maybe in my head.
Yeah,
you know,
true. Well, you know, I'm married, so those women they got a way of controlling you without controlling you.
They got a way of a lot of things, Dante, a lot of things. But you talked about your love of the Chiefs. To see that team win the Super Bowl, were you at the game? And what kind of emotions went through your body knowing that this franchise had finally won it for the first time since Super Bowl V?
I can't even describe it. I really can't. I've been asked that question before. I've never been able to come up with the word to describe it because I know the history prior to me, all the losses prior. I went through 7 years of disappointment, and then it really got ugly for a while afterwards. So I know the history of this team. I know this organization, the Hunt family, man, they do an incredible job. One of the reasons my love runs deep is because they really do a great job of taking care of their alumni, making sure they feel involved even after you're done playing for them. That's one of the reasons I go so hard for them. Also, they made my dreams come true. But the emotions I had that day at the Super Bowl, I was just shocked. I was there with Jamal Charles. And I'm just looking at the confetti. I felt like we had won, right? Yeah, I felt like we were part of this. But I have no words to describe, man. It was just an indescribable feeling. Like, this actually happened. That is red and yellow confetti. For 60 years. They probably didn't have confetti the last time the Chiefs won a Super Bowl. So, unbelievable.
Well, I bet it was, man. And again, that team couldn't, an organization couldn't be where it is today without guys like yourself making the sacrifice, doing the things that you did before this group of guys came into that locker room. But what I wanted to ask you about, what you're doing since retirement, right? Like, you know, what's been keeping you busy? What are some of the things that you're doing? I hear that you're big in the community. Just talk about some of the things that you're doing right now.
So the first thing I did when I retired back in 2009, 2010, I moved to L.A. My wife got a job working with a marketing company. So I started coaching. I thought I wanted to coach. So I got into coaching. I felt like I had been extremely blessed. And my high school coach, who was like the father I never had, was a high school coach. So I hung the shoes up and I'm like, man, money's good. Life is good. Let me go give back. So I coached for 2 years, once at the high school level at Long Beach. And then I went to my old alma mater, Texas A&M, and did a student coaching thing there in the off season with that team. quickly realized coaching was not for me.
Really? It wasn't for you? What was it about it?
Man, that damn social media be pumping their heads up. They don't want to listen to someone that's actually been through the gauntlet. Like, dude, I've been to the mountaintop, looked over the top, and like, it's 1,000 Indians over there, bro. Yeah. You don't want to do this, you don't want to go there. And they like, no, social media say, I'm the ish and whatever they say. Okay, I ain't doing
it. He's right.
Cool. Got the mom and dad at practice every day. Like, man, go to work. Yeah. Like, let me coach. You go to work. I'm going to send your son home a better player than what he came to. But they at work every day, at practice every day. Why my son not getting this? Why you not? Oh, yep. I can do it. I quickly realized, and it made me appreciate my high school coach even more because I know my mama was that mama. High school coaches, salute. After that, realized that wasn't for me. My wife and I, we moved to New Jersey. And then I kind of just dabbled into, I tried to work for New York Life, which is an investment insurance company out here in New York. And then from that point, the wife, I mentioned her earlier because she had built her little world up in the marketing field. So we started a nice little marketing company that's been rocking and rolling ever since. I pretty much helped with the business acquisition. She runs everything else. So, and then I'm real heavily involved with the Chiefs. Still doing things for them throughout the community. They have a great ambassador program. So still go and do pregame things with them, postgame things, community work, those type of things. And, you know, the typical autograph signing. Just a little bit of everything. Oh, my biggest hat is fatherhood. That's huge. That's the main thing. Six-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 2-year-old. That is the main
job. You got a fun house, dog. You got a fun house. I know you do.
You do, but like me, you started late, right? I mean, you're 43 now. I'm 41, and we got youngins. It hits a little harder at 40.
Yeah, this is a young man's game. I don't know what the hell we were thinking. This is not an old man game. I'm saying that right now. But we're gonna make it do what it do, Mike. We're gonna make it work.
I just keep telling myself, well, all those years that we had without having to worry about any kids, that was our time. Now, you know, everybody had the kids earlier. They're out. They got nothing to worry about right now. The kids are old enough.
You have kids? You have
like
kids?
Me. Yeah, I got kids. I got 4 of them. I got an 18-year-old. I got a 13-year-old. I got a 12-year-old in a couple days, and a 9-year-old. So yeah, those diaper days are done for me, man. I'm done.
That's why he still has his hair, Mike. You see, he started young, like a smart man.
Jeezy was bald. Jeezy was bald before he had kids. Don't go there, Jeezy.
If there was ever a shot of it growing back, it's out the window. Dante, a couple things before we let you go, because I know we held you a while already. You got to get back to rearing those kids. The Midwest Innocence Project. Talk to us about that.
So Will Shields actually was on that honorary board the year before. And I just have so much respect for Will. I really didn't have time to do it. Got a lot going on, but out of respect for him, I signed up. And also because I've had guys that buddies I grew up with in high school, played ball with, that went to prison. They were good dudes, messed up, and got out. So I always had an empathy and sympathy for people in prison, especially wrongfully accused guys. So,
and the project is to get wrongful convictions overturned. Is that the goal of the project?
The project is they basically raise a lot of money with events. They use my names like myself, Will Shields, to help bring more money and awareness to these situations. And it was a great thing to be a part of, man. And like I said, I had empathy. I've had guys that went through that before. Mm-hmm. So it hit home for me. So it makes sense when Will reached out. And
That's great work. And then if Mike Robbie got one more after this, but I do want to say it's timely that you're on the podcast. Your name has come up a couple of times. One, I was on Good Morning Football guest hosting one day, and they did the greatest juke moves of all time. I'm pretty sure you were number one against the Broncos.
Number one?
Yeah, you were definitely top five. You were one of the five. Your juke move against the Broncos. First of all, tell us what you remember about that. I can't remember exactly who you juked out. Tell us.
That's my all-time favorite play. Let's just say that right now.
Really?
Okay. Not only because aesthetically the way it looked, you know, I even shocked myself like, whoa, like I can't believe I did that. But more so, I think without that play, I don't have the longevity. I don't play 9 years in the NFL because, Rob, you know this, you can be a good return man, but you got to hold one of those spots down on offense and defense.
Yeah.
So by me doing that, hear me out on, real quick. I try to make this real concise. Mm-hmm. The reason I wasn't, in my opinion, successful in the first 2 years, besides not doing the right things off the field, but the other reason was I went from every down back in high school, every down back in college, to all of a sudden now I'm a pinch hitter, pinch returner, not really playing. So I can't get in the groove into the game. Like I'm going out there pinch hitting, so to speak. So once I made that play, I come into the offensive meeting the next week. I got 12 plays drawn up just for me. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
So that's why that play, even it was a great play, but for my career, all of a sudden now I'm starting to play in the offense more. Now I'm in the groove of the game. I got a nice rhythm. So now when I go return kicks, I got a lather worked up. I got the speed of the game down. Yep. Now I can get into the flow of the game. I needed that. I'm that kind of player. So for me, that play was hands down my favorite because of the importance of my career, I believe, as well as it's pretty sweet play, man. I can't.
Yeah,
like,
that was dope, man. Sweet, great man. Insight, man.
162 catches over the course of his 9 year career as a receiver. And the other thing, I think it was either this podcast or it was Good Morning Football Weekend, Mike Rob, when you talked about Aaron. Oh, it was on the air. Yeah, Aaron Jones having no hips. He said he's got no hips.
Dante Hall was the same way. When I went to go try to tackle this dude,
I like that.
I tried to tackle this dude, and oftentimes you slip down and you hang on to their bottom, their butt, right? And that's how the tackle happens. Guys like yourself, Devin Hester, Aaron Jones, running back for Green Bay, y'all don't have no hips, man. You slip right off the tackle. Josh Cribbs was the same way.
I've never heard that one. That's pretty good, my guy. That's pretty good. No hips.
I like that. I stopped the show. I said, wait a second. Yes. Did you just say he has no hips? What does that mean? And he went on to explain how the great returners, Dante Hall, had no hips. He just slapped.
You just slapped right off the tackle,
excellent.
Man.
That's excellent, man.
Oh, man. Go ahead.
Dante.
You got it, man.
Yeah, I got it. Dante, this has been a fantastic visit with you. Now that I know you're right around the corner, let's visit in person. Mike Rob, if you ever comes back to New Jersey,
yes.
Let's all get together. This is great.
If you guys are here on a Thursday or a Sunday, I got the spot for you to go watch a game. We have us a little libation, have some good eats. I got a spot for you guys.
Oh, so I got to take y'all up on that.
If you're in New Jersey, yeah. We have a good time.
I will.
I love it. Oh, Dante, this is great. And you're always welcome back. Whenever we get a good guest, you're always welcome back. You just got to have a locker room story. And I know you got like 10 of them ready to go. So that's good for 10 visits. That's your pass here on Total Access. The locker room, my man. Hey,
good chopping it up.
Appreciate it. Thank you,
my brothers.
That'll do it for this episode of the Total Access, the locker room. For more insight with a locker room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.